Welcome back. I'm Peter St. Ange. This is a weekly roundup of my daily videos on the economy and freedom, where I cut through the BS and lay out what the gaslighting clowns pulled out of their hats this week and what is coming next. The Philly Fed just admitted that the payroll numbers are cooked, to the tune of 800,000 jobs that are not real. The first warnings came last year when the Philly Fed's quarterly census of employment and wages found that instead of the 1.1 million jobs reported by Joe Biden's BLS, the actual number was 10,000. So that is an astounding miss. It's a 110-fold miss. It takes us from healthy job growth to nothing. In fact, according to Philly, 23 states actually lost jobs in that period. Now, you might recall media banging on how stupid Americans are for not appreciating the Biden miracle. As Paul Krugman put it, quote, there is a huge disconnect between public perception and reality. And here we are again. The latest Philly numbers say the BLS is overstating jobs once again by 800,000 through December, and likely over a million once again if you extend the gap into this year. That implies job growth nationwide that's about half what official numbers are saying, which suggests that a lot of the stellar unemployment rate right now is not people with jobs, it is people who have given up or dropped out of the workforce. Now, this is pretty bad considering Washington is currently flooding the nation with $6 trillion in spending, of which $2 trillion is debt. That should at least goose the job numbers since somebody is getting all of that money. So how can they cook numbers, you might ask? Easy, major government numbers are mostly made of statistics. Adjustments like seasonal adjustment or so-called company birth-death models that try to estimate how many new companies there are and how many have gone away, they don't actually count the stuff. The reason they don't count is because NOST data is not available in real time. A lot of it simply doesn't exist. So companies and workers don't respond to questionnaires, or they return shoddy data. They just fill in whatever, since the people filling in government surveys are not the A-team. So government statisticians will take those little stray bits of data they have and statistically adjust them through a series of funhouse mirrors until they look truthy enough. What you get out the other end, in theory, more or less captures the full picture of how many people have jobs, or how much consumers are spending, or how many factories are being built or shutting down. The problem, of course, is who is doing that adjustment and what is their incentives. So you might assume a government statistician's goal is accuracy, since in theory, if you're a bad statistician, you'll get fired. In reality, of course, government workers do not get fired for shoddy work, only for liking Donald Trump posts. What government statisticians can get punished for, say demoted or reassigned to Fargo, is not playing ball. So in government, playing ball means saying what needs to be said so that your boss can get some more budget love from the White House and Congress. So spot the problem. So what's next? The lies will get worse as the economy gets worse. Bigger screw-ups require bigger lies. There was, of course, a time that rigged government statistics was crazy talk. I myself might have considered it crazy talk a few years ago. I don't anymore. And apparently, on jobs at least, the Philly Fed agrees. If you happen to live in Canada and haven't yet escaped, it's about to get a lot worse. That's according to a newly leaked secret report from the RCMP, that's the Canadian equivalent of the FBI. They warn that Canada's quality of life will, quote, deteriorate further in the next few years, writing that, quote, the coming period of recession will accelerate the decline in living standards, in particular for the young. They even warn of the, quote, end of abundance. That's just the opener. The RCMP goes on to warn this radical decline in living standards could lead to widespread, quote, disillusion with the government, to which law enforcement needs to respond. In other words, they're not just saying it's going to get bad, they're saying it could get so bad that once peaceful Canadians rise up en masse. The report was obtained by an activist professor at UBC who filed an access of information request. What they handed over is heavily redacted, meaning we can only imagine what other gems are in store for the long-suffering people of Canada. We can also only imagine what countermeasures the RCMP is suggesting to law enforcement. Given the redactions, perhaps they are actions or laws they imagine voters might not like. The background here is that Canada's had a tough decade under their buffoon Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. I've mentioned in previous videos what's happening in Canada's economy. In short, houses cost San Francisco prices, but jobs pay West Virginia wages, if you can find one. According to the National Post, just 1 in 4 Canadian families can afford a house, while Canadian wages have been flat since 2016. That's 8 years. The average Canadian now earns almost $18,000 less than an American, hence West Virginia. Why? Simple. Under Trudeau, the Canadian government has taken over the economy. Business investment in Canada has plunged by a third, while government workers are growing almost 4 times faster than the private sector. 1 in 5 Canadians now work for the government, so they presumably vote to make it bigger, and they earn 30% more than the tax-paying suckers who foot the bill, who, by the way, on average, fork over half of their salary. In theory, the government of Canada would see this and respond with new policies. In fact, they're building out the police state. From the authoritarian crackdown on the truckers back in 2022, to a new so-called online hate bill that would throw you in jail, potentially for life, if a judge thinks you said something racist or transphobic on Facebook. Now, that might give a hint of what's in all those redacted pages about how law enforcement might address the end of abundance. So what's next? Canada's next election might not be for another year and a half. In Canada's system, the date is at Justin Trudeau's pleasure. Conservative apple muncher Pierre Poilievre is ahead in the polls, one reason Trudeau might want to wait. And Pierre is base enough to at least stop things getting worse, but of course, Canada state-run media from the CBC on down are working Pierre the way our own loyal state media worked Trump. Either way, a year and a half is a long time for things to get worse, and it's a long time for baby Doc Trudeau to impose whatever creative solutions the RCMP is hiding from voters. I'm a big fan of saving Bitcoin for the long term, and the Unchained Bitcoin IRA is a great way to do that. You get the tax advantages, and if it's a Roth IRA, you're not going to pay capital gains so long as you HODL. Most Bitcoin IRAs make you give up control, which can expose you to exchange hacks or even re-lend it out like banks do. With Unchained, you control the keys to your Bitcoin, which means you always know it's there. They also provide one-on-one concierge service to walk you through it and answer any questions. Why pay more taxes than you need to? Set it up today at Unchained.com. Use promo code Peter to get $100 off a Bitcoin IRA. Believe it or not, there are actually senators in Washington who oppose a CBDC. The so-called digital dollar that would convert every last dollar into a government-run master spreadsheet. Recently, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, along with 4 other senators, reintroduced the CBDC Anti-Surveillance State Act. The bill would improve on past bans by also banning so-called intermediated CBDCs, where the Fed uses banks as go-betweens, which effectively outsources the police state, putting a glove on the fist. Of course, given that 80 to 90% of the public opposes CBDCs, you might think it would be more than 5 senators introducing the bill, but then this is Congress, where no expectation is too low. Now, in case you're unfamiliar with CBDC, it's a government cryptocurrency that would replace the U.S. dollar with a centralized database run by the government of who owns what. That means federal agents could see every dollar you spend, they could see every dollar you own, and every dollar you donate to the wrong political cause. They would also let them block any transaction they like at the push of a button. So imagine going to a political rally and coming home to find out you cannot pay your mortgage or buy groceries. If that sounds like science fiction, it's what actually happened in 2022 in the Canadian trucker protests. So protesters' bank accounts were frozen. Some literally could not buy food with their bank cards. Now, take that same totalitarian power and apply it to every single dollar. There is no opting out. Of course, beyond enabling a police state, a CBDC is an open invitation to redistribute infinite amounts of money. After all, if every dollar in existence is just a collection of numbers on a giant spreadsheet, why not take some from the bad guys and give it to your voters? Poof, your life savings gone. Final point to a CBDC is what it does to the economy. So central banks today cause the boom-bust cycle by pushing interest rates too low. But there's a natural ceiling to their mayhem because they cannot force negative rates, not significantly negative. After all, if the bank is reducing your dollars every month, like if $100 turns into $95, you would obviously just pull your money out and keep the 100. It's a different game with a CBDC. They could make all dollars lose value and go to 95. You cannot opt out. China's already bragged about using this use it or lose it feature to stimulate the economy. So if, say, consumers are not spending enough for the next election, just force them to spend. So what's next? The moment this ban stands little chance of passing, partly because most Republicans in Congress are not paying attention to CBDCs, but mostly because Senate Democrats actually like them, even if their voters do not. That means the Fed will continue building a CBDC in the dark, illegally, while claiming it is just a pilot. The good news is the public overwhelmingly opposes a CBDC, no matter what political party. The bad news is Congress does not care about public opinion unless voters make them care. Tens of thousands of mainstream journalists are being laid off in what's being called an extinction event for corporate journalism. Of course, for regular Americans, that all sounds pretty fantastic, given those corporate journalists have become woke Marxist activists whose main purpose is gaslighting voters into the revolution. Meaning it might be a very good thing if those scribblers put away their keyboards and learn how to, say, install drywall. The pace is now quickening with last week's wide-ranging layoffs at the LA Times, once among America's most prestigious newspapers. They laid off 20% of their staff, including 115 journalists, and including their entire DC bureau in an election year, along with gutting sports, tech, business, and even breaking news media's traditional bread and butter. Meanwhile, BuzzFeed just shuttered its news division, which was once worth $1.3 billion and is now down 98%. Sports Illustrated just closed altogether. We've seen major layoffs at Time Magazine, Atlantic, The Washington Post, NPR, Bloomberg, and Condé Nast, which publishes The New Yorker and Vanity Fair. Even The New York Times cut 240 jobs after the Gray Lady lost tens of millions last year. In all, according to Axios, 20,000 media jobs were cut last year, which is up 6 times from the previous year. And so far in 2024, they appear to be accelerating. So what's driving it? In short, a loss of trust, which is turning off readers, taking ad revenue along with them. After all, if people don't trust you, they won't subscribe. Many won't even read. In fact, Americans' trust in media has plummeted to a record low, with just 1 in 3 Americans saying they have any trust in the media. A record high of Americans, so almost 40%, say they have zero trust in the media at all. Just 29% of independent voters trust media, and a dismal 11% of Republicans. Of course, together, those two groups make up over 2/3 of the country. Even Democrats are losing faith, with trust dropping 18 points since COVID, driven especially by younger Democrats who no longer believe that journalists tell the truth. Incidentally, trust in media has fallen straight line since 2018, which is when they threw off the mask of objectivity, starting with Trump and then trying to cancel everybody from Alex Jones and Milo Yiannopoulos and all of us, converting themselves into the intellectual bodyguard of the Marxist elite, carrying water on everything from the vax to the BLM riots to, of course, transitory inflation and the miracle that is Bidenomics. It's hard to rebuild trust after all of that. So what's next? The corporate media isn't just dying, it is actively killing itself, replaced by grassroots news sources who are often more expert and certainly are more honest. The news media will continue lying, they'll continue attacking their readers, they'll continue trying to censor you. The same game plan that has been wiping them out, and in the process progressively removing themselves from the conversation altogether. I'd actually expected to accelerate. Elon Musk has built a distribution channel on X or Twitter, where the alternative media can finally compete on a level playing field with the dinosaurs. For example, these daily videos get 500,000 views, produced on an iPhone and a $100 mic, and there are thousands like me who are eager to replace the lying activists who run our dying mediocrity. Do you have an IRA, 401k, or an annuity? Pay attention. A secret war on your retirement is here that threatens your financial future. Consider the years of hard work you've invested in your nest egg, dreaming of a comfortable retirement. Now, imagine it all disappears overnight. This isn't a distant possibility. It's our current reality outlined in a new report from our show sponsor, ITM Trading. Facing collapse, the U.S. economy with soaring inflation, growing national debt, and looming bank crises threatens your retirement accounts. Think the FDIC has you covered? This free report reveals why you're more at risk than you think. We're on the cusp of an economic downturn, potentially rivaling the Great Depression, with your retirement at the forefront of the crisis. Call 866-414-1366 to get your hands on their free report, The Secret War on Your Retirement, that breaks down the current crisis and what you can do to protect your retirement. The Federal Reserve just reported its largest loss in history by far, but don't worry, you'll be covering it. A few days ago, the Fed announced its preliminary 2023 financial statements. Note, these are not audited results. We have to take the Fed at its word. You may recall Ron Paul's decades-long campaign to audit the Fed, which failed since the Fed is an unconstitutional racket who answers to nobody. As Murray Rothbard noted, the Fed actually has less oversight than the CIA. At any rate, even with the Fed grading its own homework, last year it reported an operating loss of $114 billion. To put that in perspective, it would be the third largest bankruptcy in American history, just behind Lehman Brothers and Washington Mutual in 2008, both ironically also caused by the Fed. But of course, that's the losses in a single year, with much more to come. So how did the Fed lose so much money? Some of it comes from their paying Wall Street to park money at the Fed, which they do to hide inflation and because they like sending money to Wall Street. But the bulk of the Fed's losses are because they printed trillions to finance COVID lockdowns, used those trillions to buy bonds, mainly government debt, and then when they panic hiked rates to try and choke off inflation, prices collapsed. Meaning the Fed's pile of $9 trillion worth of bonds started losing money hand over fist. In fact, estimates of unrealized losses, meaning money the Fed has lost but hasn't yet fessed up to, could be well over $1 trillion at this point. Of course, those unrealized losses don't come clean until the Fed sells the bonds, which they do either because the bond matured, so bonds have fixed times like 90 days or 5 years, or because the Fed pawned them to try and soak up inflationary dollars called quantitative tightening. Now, last year's 114 was a bit of both, with another trillion plus to come so far. So what does it mean? In the near term, nothing. The Fed ignores losses because in a pickle, it can just print the money, converting it into inflation. Longer term, though, every last penny the Fed loses is going on the taxpayer tab. The reason is all those losses cancel the money the Fed is supposed to be paying Treasury every year. These are called Fed remittances, and they're the profits from printing money and lending it out, essentially a licensing fee for counterfeiting. Those Fed remittances had been running about $80 billion a year, but now they will be underwater for potentially decades. It's worth noting this is fresh territory. The Fed never before turned in a loss until 2022. Now it will be losing money until our kids are grown. So what's next? The Fed's losses are just beginning, 114 down, a trillion plus to go. In fact, they'll continue getting even bigger until interest rates come down hard, which will only happen with a hard recession, meaning yet more trillions in debt. Either way, we're looking at much more on the federal debt that's already hit $275,000 per American household, growing at almost $30,000 per household per year. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe to get next week's episode fresh in your inbox and go to petersanange.com to read the weekly articles with charts and all the gory details. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.